I want to see this evening not as an evening for a lecture. I want to see this as a period of a communication, a dialogue, more or less. I am not standing here to talk about things you don't already know. I think you know what I'm going to talk about. I want to invite you to come with me to Nigeria, where the debate over resources, we call it resource control, has exploded like wildfire in the Harmattan. There's a big debate going on there. Debate over control of resources. Now, when we talk about control of resources, we are talking about human resources and other types of natural resources. And indeed, systems, control of systems. So we can talk about democratic resources, we can talk about oil resources, we can talk about human resources. There is a big debate going on there right now, even as I speak. That debate is also here in Canada. The debate, I believe, is also in the United States. I want to believe the debate is in Europe and other parts of the world, but you can see it manifested in different forms. In 1997, we were involved in the struggle against the Multilateral Agreement on Investment. From Seattle through Quebec, Prague, Washington, Genoa, very recently, where we were all on the streets of Genoa, the debate had moved to institutions, the World Bank, the WTO, and other institutions, big governments. And of course, the struggle against corporate rule. These are struggles that can be located within the context of resources. It is absolutely important that you do not see the Ogoni struggle, the Ijaw struggle, the Urhobo struggle, the Shekiri struggle, and all other ethnic nations in the Niger Delta, their struggle to protect their water, the air that they breathe, the food that they eat, the governmental system that is in the country, their struggle to have a better place to live. I would not want you to isolate that struggle from the struggle that is going on here in Canada, in the United States. I am talking about the struggle here of your democracy being hijacked by corporations and big institutions. That democratic resource that you need to hold so dear, which is now surrendered and have been taken over by big companies who are using these resources for their own greedy purposes. You can look into every single detail of their manifestations, their deliberate attempt, and in fact, practical attempt to go into your table. When you go home, you put your food on the table. What type of food are you eating? Who is manufacturing that food? How did it move from the ground to the table where you are? As you walk out of here and you enter into your car and you drive, or if you don't have a car, you join any public transport, have people ever sat back to say, look, what is driving this car? How did the oil that has made it possible for this car to move, where is it coming from? Is it coming from land where people are happy? Is it coming from environment where the trees are protected, where the birds and the animals can move about freely? Because that environment is not owned by human beings alone. The people are also entitled, the animals are so entitled to own those resources, the environment. And so we in Nigeria have thought it wise, because it is a matter of survival, to challenge these institutions that have organized themselves as corporations, organized themselves as the World Trade Organization, or the IMF and the World Bank. They destroyed our universities in Nigeria in 1985 through structural adjustment programs so that they can make it impossible for us to know, to learn, and to join forces with other human beings around the world to seek for knowledge and seek for justice and liberation. The IMF, the World Bank, these institutions, they are right here, making it impossible for people to live their lives. And we say we are going to challenge them. But the biggest challenge, I think, does not lie with our just picking up a pen to write a letter to say, look, you Shell, you are bad. It is not enough to write a letter to the World Bank to say, World Bank, you are evil. I believe that every one of us have a duty to move into the streets peacefully with a placard. I am talking about peaceful resistance. Nobody takes you seriously when you just write a letter. But it is important to write, because if every one of us can write, it will make a difference. But not many of us are willing to join Amnesty and write letters. So, and we just got to go into the streets and into the creeks and stand firm resolutely against injustice. But there are manifestations that have made people to begin to question a number of things. 9/11, as it's being popularly called here in North America, September 11th, exploded on our faces and weakened our resistance. Right now, people are weakened. People are afraid. We are scared. Don't go. If you go, terrorists will hit you. If you go, big government will roll out the tanks and crush you. So we are all withdrawn to our cocoon of individualism. But I am saying, we must not give room to terrorists. They hit our conscience and hit our humanity by flying planes to bomb innocent people that we are working at the World Trade Center. Innocent people. I could have been in that plane. You could be in that plane. But these guys never cared about our humanity, and they flew in there. So they committed a wrong act, and a punishable act, and they have to be looked for and brought to justice. But we have also got to question, what have we done? It is not just merely to condemn. We've got to take action. Government is taking action. But is the action government is taking the right action? What action can you yourself take in this resistance against terrorism? And terrorism must be looked at very clearly. Do not forget ecological terrorists. Those who have hijacked your food that you eat. You must not forget the governmental terrorists who are making it impossible for you to exercise your democratic rights. You must not forget all other forms of organized terrorism that is making it impossible for us to move forward in terms of progress. Like I said at the beginning, this is a communication, it is a dialogue. I think we need to shift the debate to the issues that matter. And what are those issues that matter? One, livelihood issues. Two, love. Three, peaceful coexistence. And finally, four, equity. Equity within the context of the world. Must we begin to see the world from a north-south dichotomy? The north is rich and the south is poor. Where are these resources that have made it possible for the north to be rich and the South to be poor? I used to tell my friends in the States and here in Canada that the only time you hear about Africa and about Nigeria is when they bring violence into your television. There's HIV/AIDS pandemic. there is tribal wars in the Congo Basin. Oh, these Africans, they don't know how to organize themselves. Only warring, HIV. That is the only time you hear about Africa and Nigeria. But that continent called Africa is the richest continent perhaps on planet Earth. Cecil Rhodes and his band of rogues invaded South Africa and made it possible for apartheid to emerge because of resources. Gold, diamond, beautiful wildlife, captivating environment. We need that. In West Africa, the story is not different. Tubman Goldie moved in there shortly after slave trade. And of course, remember the movement of people, the human resources that were moved from that part, from my homeland to the Americas to become slaves. The despoilation of humanity that contributed. And then Goldie went in there, looted resources, and now Shell is there, looting, killing. What comes out of Nigeria? Violence, debt, HIV. People cannot organize themselves, dictatorship. That's what you hear. We are talking about equity. That the resources there, the resources in Africa, are resources for all of humanity. But who are those that have taken these resources to themselves? They are organized as corporations and as shareholders to the detriment of the majority. We need to look into this and to demand for equity. We need peaceful coexistence as a people. I don't want any of us to walk into the streets and you begin to shiver. Is that person next to me a terrorist? Is that person a rogue? Is that person, those people, what constitute them? What is going through their mind? We need peaceful coexistence in every part of the world. And we cannot have peaceful coexistence except and until there is equity, which we have talked about earlier. So the world must be challenged to work for equitable distribution of resources. We must work towards ensuring that there's no hunger in any home, whether in Canada or in my native Niger Delta, Nigeria, or in Rwanda, or in the United States. We don't want people to be hungry. And because there are enough resources for everyone, there should be a struggle to redistribute resources. Not to allow a few who have organized themselves as corporations to hijack these resources. We must talk about love. Love, I think, all religions, whether Buddhism or Hinduism, whether Islam or Christianity, there's one core or traditional religion in my native country. There's one common thread that runs through all these. Love. If we love one another, I don't think anybody will be so insane as to hijack a plane and go hit the World Trade Center and kill 5,000 people. That would not be possible. We've got to struggle for love. It is imperative that we do that, and it has to start from the home, to the classroom, to the boardroom, to the streets and to the creeks. It has to be. We've got to struggle for it. We are not struggling for it right now. It must be a fundamental imperative on us all to struggle for love. Lastly, is the livelihood question. Our lifestyles. What kind of lifestyle do we live? If you need just one car, why must you have two? Why? You need just a car. A family of two, if one car is enough, why go for two, three? How much carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide are we spewing out? If you can do away with a car and get on a bicycle and it's convenient, why not? What are those things we are putting resources on? All these resources, as you know from all the books, are coming from one source. Fossil fuel is non-renewable. But this, the catastrophic fallout is affecting us all. We launched a campaign in Nigeria called Operation Climate Change, which was intended to shut down the gas flares that was contributing to global warming, and the military came and they shut down innocent people because they were disturbing, quote, shale oil from producing. Several have died, paying the price for the lifestyle that people live in the so-called rich industrialized north. But there is good news coming from the industrialized north, though. That good news was demonstrated eloquently in Seattle when young people, old people came together and marched in the street and shut down the WTO. That good news followed in other such places until Genoa recently. The determination of humanity to say no to injustice was replicated then. And I think that we must not allow 9/11 to shake our resolve for enthroning justice. We must look at 9/11 straight in the face, isolate evil from good, and take the path of good until justice is done. This, I believe, is our challenge.